Wow. So 16 years at PwC.
Yeah, 16 years. It's quite a long time.
That is a long time.
Enjoyed it the whole time as well, actually. So I joined as a graduate, having done sort of maths with stats at university, and been doing deals in sort of energy and infrastructure ever since, and just sort of enjoyed it throughout.
And now today we're going to do a conversation that I've wanted to have for a while, because we're at the, how to describe it? We're talking about deals today. The word deal is always very sexy and exciting. And today we are essentially going to talk through how assets are bought and sold, and how advisors like PwC can support on that, and also how companies are bought and sold, how everything's bought and sold, and how deals work. Jonathan, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great podcast. Listen to it a lot.
Oh,
really glad to be here.
Do not edit this out, Izzy. more, please. thank you. That's very kind. All right. So, Jonathan, firstly, who are you? You're at PwC. What do you do at PwC, and what does PwC do?
Yeah, okay. Well, so PwC is quite a big place, about 24,000 people in the UK, but I'll just talk about my bit. So the bit of PwC that I sit in is our lead advisory practice. So we're doing sort of M&A deals, debt and capital raises for businesses. And
M&A being?
Mergers and acquisitions. So helping people buy and sell companies, essentially.
Okay.
And the part of PwC that and my team that I sit in, we particularly focus on energy infrastructure M&A. So we're doing deals in all the various different things that are going to help us to decarbonize right across the energy transition. So assets and sort of businesses that do things like smart metering, battery storage, EV charging, hydrogen deals, those sorts of things.
Okay. And this is, you work on both sides, right? You work on the side of companies looking to buy other assets, and you work on the side of companies who own assets trying to sell them, or own companies and trying to sell them.
That's correct. So it's a proper sort of full investment banking lead advisory service within PwC. So we help on both the buy side when, you know, there's a company that wants to buy a business or an asset, and we help them think about, you know, how can they make that transaction successful? So how can they go about sort of offering the right value for it? How can they go negotiating the deal? What are their strategy and tactics as part of that? And we also help on the sell side. So there might be sort of a corporate that wants to divest of something, let's say it's a battery storage portfolio. We would help them think about who they can market it to, would help them think about sort of how to get the best positioning of that asset, run a competition, and get the best price for them.
Okay. And this is particularly pertinent now because the battery storage industry, we're going to talk about batteries as ever, but we're also going to think about wider assets. But batteries in particular, there's now a big enough market that these things are being bought and sold, right? Which is quite exciting.
Yes.
And we're seeing them being transferred from, in many cases, higher cost of capital owners to lower cost of capital owners as they become de-risked and all of the good stuff that's happening in our industry. Coming back to PwC, so what's PwC?
What is PwC?
What is PwC?
Well,
I'm being a bit naughty here. Okay. I tend to ask these, talk to me like I'm a five-year-old questions.
So it's the world's sort of largest professional services and financial services advisory firm. So you've got a lot of advisors, clever people there that sort of want to help get deals done or sort of provide other services. So things like accounting, tax, you know, due diligence, those sorts of things.
Okay, and you guys step in as consultants to support on various aspects of the way that businesses are run.
Correct. Yeah.
Cool. So let's come back to deals. What do we mean when we say a deal? Is a deal done when it's signed, or is it when it's paid, or how do you define a deal? When do you guys get paid?
So as part of the services that I provide, we can be sort of flexible in terms of how we structure things, but we're usually trying to get a deal done and get paid on successful completion of that deal. And successful completion sort of usually means getting our client to get that deal sort of closed, done. And that's normally when they've signed the agreement, the sale and purchase agreement for that transaction, and when the money starts to flow.
Okay. So how would it work? So Modo, let's say we own a 100 megawatt battery, and we want to, we own it, it's doing great, it's the best asset on the planet, and we want to sell it to, I don't know, a pension fund, right? Mm. So then we come to PwC and we say, please help us. And what does that process look like? Yeah.
Well, first of all, you made the right choice because you came to PwC. so well done. Tick for that. There's no one size fits all for a transaction, okay? Because every sort of business or assets will have its own unique quirks. You might have, you know, I might have clients that, you know, for whom sort of value is a highly important item, but also there might be other bits in there that, so for example, giving the business to the right sort of partner to take it forwards, that sort of thing, or sort of finding somebody who's deliverable in a transaction, or getting the right terms and conditions. So we like to structure a transaction and run a process for our clients in a way that's going to meet their objectives. So that's one thing that's sort of worth sort of noting.
But there's the saying in I just know from venture capital, which is, I'll give you whatever price you want, but on my terms. I guess there's so much more to it than price and valuation, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so we
try,
in there.
No, yeah. That's fine, but we try to take all of those sort of things into account. And so I'll talk you through a sort of a typical sales process, but just bear in mind that there's no one-size-fits-all, and it can vary and it can flex from deal to deal. So look, ordinarily, there are normally about sort of three phases for a deal. There'll be a preparation phase.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be usually sort of a round one, and then there'll be a sort of a round two. So I'm selling your battery storage assets for you. And in that preparation phase at the start, we would come in and have a look at those assets and the economics around them. And we would have a think about what are the things that are unique about this? What are the things that are really going to help sort of make these assets stand out versus the rest? So, you know, that might be sort of something sort of bespoke or unique about the technology or their placement within the market, something like that. We'll have a think through all of that, and we'll work that through with our clients.
Their position on the Modo leaderboard, perhaps.
Exactly. That might be an important factor. We'll think about how to best position those assets and how we might sell them. But we'll do that in conjunction with thinking about who we would be selling them to.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be a sort of a broad range of different interested parties. There could be pension funds, there could be infrastructure funds, there could be corporates. And each one of those different sort of types of buyers will have their own unique interests and things they're looking for. So we'll help develop sort of a long list of potentially sort of interested parties, but we'll also be thinking about how do we best sort of target the sales material to those parties to bring out the things that are of interest to them. So that'll be a portion of the preparation. And then we will also, as part of that preparation phase, we'll work out, you know, what's the timetable going to be, what's the process going to be, so how's it all going to be structured, also whether, you know, our client might want to commission some due diligence from another advisor that can help them have a smoother sales process, because, you know, if you can get some DD done up front and early, then that reduces the burden midway through the process.
So they might bring in DMV or someone like an engineering consultancy, yes, to do the technical stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, I don't know, what else do you have? A law firm for legal, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Or they might bring in sort of a market forecaster to sort of look at what might the revenue forecast be for that asset. So you pull all of that together and prepare then some sales material, usually a sort of a teaser, and then which is a short document to sort of gauge interest from people early on, and then a longer form sort of information memorandum is what it's called. So
the IM, the famous IM. So you send out a teaser, which is a couple of pages before before a non-disclosure agreement's been signed, which is to the market. Hey guys, we've got something exciting coming up. Put your name in the hat if you're interested, and then you qualify those and go to the next stage.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm doing your job for you here. Yeah, and then you do the IM, the information memorandum, and what information is in there?
So there's usually an overview of the business or the assets, in this case the batteries. What are they? Where do they sit? And but also sort of financial forecasts. How much money do we think they're going to make? And what does the management team that's sort of selling them, what do they think they're going to make out into the future? So all the necessary information, which is what an investor would want if they were to be able to provide and price up an indicative offer. And that's what we try to pull together.
Okay, cool. Taking a step back a second now. So what does a market look like at the moment in energy storage? So who's interested in these assets? And how is that changing over time? Have you seen a big increase or decrease in interest? And have you seen new players taking part in this market?
So energy transition or battery storage specifically?
Well, let's do all of it.
Yeah, okay. All right, okay. Energy transition as a whole, there is huge amounts of interest and appetite. So on the need side in the market, I think if you take the UK alone, we need something like £40 billion a year of investment. That's not even talking about sort of secondary transactions, you know, businesses getting bought and sold. That's just primary capital going into the UK in order to get anywhere near net zero by 2050. So
wow.
The demand need is huge.
for let's put it into context, that is more than, that's about what HS2 was originally priced up as, isn't it? Something like that. Yeah. Or it's bigger than a Hinkley Point C every year.
It's big, yeah.
It's massive.
It's big. So that's the need. That's what the market needs in terms of primary investment. And then on top of that, you then got a huge both financial and sort of corporate market out there that all want to increasingly invest in, you know, ESG or energy transition sort of opportunities. And I think globally there was something in the order of about $750 billion worth of energy transition investments last year. That shows the scale of sort of the, wow, the appetite for people to try and invest in these things. And that's only going to continue as trends like ESG just sort of accelerate. And as, you know, more and more governments, I think we're now at sort of 80% of the world signed up to sort of net zero, get behind and create and stimulate this market and stimulate the need for that investment.
And what's ESG, just for folks listening?
Environmental and social governance.
Okay. And it's a framework that people want to invest within, this framework, so that, correct, they can, I don't know, it's a bit, you know what? ESG is a bit of a controversial one, because there's that HSBC dude who stood up and said it's a joke, right? Mm. I remember he got sacked. I remember reading that in the Financial Times. And I think, like, the top ESG company in the world, something like, is it ExxonMobil? Something like that. So the ESG thing is, it's controversial, but it is also a really good thing. It's just perhaps the way that we're putting it into place isn't perfect. We're going down a rabbit hole here, but what do you think about that, Jonathan?
Well, so at its heart, it is the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
It is businesses, it is investors moving their capital, moving their investment in a direction that is going to help have a positive impact on the world. But it is complicated. So, you know, sometimes you can do something which is good on the E front, but is perhaps more damaging on the S front. So let's say you want to suddenly invest substantially into battery storage and transition a business away from, I don't know, oil and gas towards that. Well, that might be really good from an E front, but then, you know, what does that mean in terms of the jobs of those in the sort of oil and gas space and,
yeah,
sort of the implications on them? And so you might have a detrimental impact on the S front. So you can get quite a lot of complexity around those issues.
Sorry, I pulled you into something there, which could be a whole topic in itself. And yeah, I do agree with you. Mm. The ESG thing, just the way, maybe implementation is the issue and the way we're measuring it, but the point itself, the, yes, principle we should be doing. So coming back to what you do in your, yes, job in mergers and acquisitions, so how, yes, much of your time is spent on supporting the sale of or the purchase of assets, mm, and how much of it is spent with companies?
Yeah.
And then I want to talk, if you don't mind, if you can give some examples, mm, of the kind of companies and assets that you've been involved in.
Yeah, very happy to. So I'd say it's slightly skews a bit more towards assets, but it's not heavily towards assets. At the moment, and sort of historically, if you think about the energy transition market, most of the money has been flowing into the build out of infrastructure.
Yeah.
So onshore wind, solar PV, now sort of more and more battery storage. That is where the majority of the capital is going. But we're increasingly seeing lots of exciting new businesses pop up around that space who are offering services into that and helping to. So, you know, I'm thinking of businesses like sort of EPC contractors who might sort of connect a battery, mm-hmm, or you know, clever businesses that can do optimization and sort of, you know, revenue sort of trading, or, you know, consultancy or subscriptions businesses that you know, provide information around those markets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so so roughly 60%-ish, you say, in assets. Mm-hmm. And should we talk about some examples? Let's get to the juicy stuff. Some examples of some deals you've been involved in, yes, and what they've looked like. Yeah. I know there's lots that you're not allowed to say, but I'm going to have a go pushing you anyway. So, what sort of deals you've been involved with recently, and why are they interesting?
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll there's quite a few that I can talk about. So, in the last few years, we've helped on a number of deals right across sort of the value chain. So, one example would be a business called Zenobe Energy.
Yeah, we love Zenobe. Yeah.
Yep. And we got to know them about 3 or 4 years ago and have helped them on sort of multiple transactions. So first of all, we helped them to raise about £35 million worth of growth capital from JIRA, Japanese, mm-hmm, Strategic. Then we went on to sort of help them raise £25 million worth of bank debt from Santander. That, mm-hmm, was sort of specifically around the battery storage assets. And then more recently, we helped them get £150 million worth of growth capital from InfraCapital.
Wow, big tickets.
Yep.
And so that's an important thing, actually, that you guys don't just deal with the buying and selling of businesses, but you also help with raising capital.
Correct.
Because that none of that involved buying and selling businesses. I don't think it was raising capital to do more.
No. But essentially, this is primary investment into businesses. And this is those businesses issuing new share capital and receiving money for issuing that new share capital to those incoming investors.
Yeah. Cool. And what other kind of transactions have you been involved with?
So sticking with energy storage for a second, we also helped Infra Capital to invest in a heat storage business, a Scandinavian business called Energy Nest.
We know Energy Nest, I think, yeah.
Okay. So Infra Capital put 110 million euros into that business to help sort of build out. And so that's a primary deal, capital growth. So to help them sort of build out their proposition specifically around creating a service around the heat storage sort of technology that they have.
Cool. And what are those? Let's talk about the Zenobē deal for a second. Mm-hmm. So they it was equity, and then at the end it was a big chunk mm-hmm. of debt. And how are those transactions?
Well, it was equity, debt, and then a big chunk of equity again.
Oh, was it? Okay, yeah. My bad.
That's right.
And so what? How is that different? Because I guess sometimes you're dealing with. I'll let you explain. Why is that different? The process.
The process for
raising debt versus equity, for example.
For debt versus they have a lot of similarities at a really high level. So you're still trying to sort of create information about that business, but you're positioning it to people who have a different product that's a debt product that's being issued there, and they have different interests. So they're more concerned about the downside. What's the risk if this asset or this business doesn't actually make the money that they're saying they're going to make?
Yeah.
Whereas equity investors take a slightly more balanced view, might be more interested in some of the upsides and how it's going to outperform.
And what about you guys? You guys sold Cornwall, right, to Beaumont Capital as well, which was a big deal quite recently.
Correct. Yes, we did. So we did that just 2 or 3 months ago.
It's Cornwall Insight, by the way.
Cornwall Insight, correct. Yes. So helped sort of the shareholders there. This was a secondary deal. So this was helping them exit sort of in majority sale. Mm-hmm. Some of the sort of the team sort of stayed with it, but we helped them with the whole sort of process that I just described earlier.
Yeah.
So the whole sort of preparation for sale, round one, round two, and then eventually sort of Beaumark investing. I think what's interesting about that transaction is, one, it sort of emphasizes that point I was making about these businesses that provide services to the transition mm-hmm. and that attracting interest from investors. Two, it's private equity as opposed to infrastructure funds. So you can see that private equity as a class of investor is getting more and more excited about this space.
Mm-hmm.
And they really liked and bought into the fact that the business is supporting the energy transition and saw that as a huge growth market.
Yeah.
And they also like the fact that a portion of that business is subscriptions based as well as consulting. And both the subscriptions and the consulting are sort of valuable bits of the business and sort of complement each other, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, Cornwall's a great business. I don't know how old they are, like maybe a decade or two, a while, right?
Yeah.
I don't know whether Nigel's still involved, but they built a business that is very well respected. People love Cornwall in the market. And we took a close interest in that because Modo is not that dissimilar to Cornwall. I mean, we're probably more technology driven. Mm. But our team were, when that news came out, we were interested. I guess the main difference is it would be too early for us to even consider. I mean, I think we're going to go all the way. We're going to ring the bell on the stock exchange. but it was very interesting to us to see that deal happen. And the fact that it's private equity too shows that, there's a lot of interest in this space.
There definitely is.
And so have you got any deals alive at the moment? Modo's just raised 100 million quid. What should we buy through PwC? what's in the window?
So there's a couple of things that we're working on at the moment. I can't tell you about all of them, but
you don't have to tell
us. We're currently in the middle of selling a pump storage hydro asset. So a bit of long duration storage for you.
Very topical.
It's development stage, so it's quite early on in its sort of journey, but that's out there at the moment. And we have just recently been appointed to sell sort of a couple of hundred megawatts worth of operational battery storage.
Awesome.
So that'll be hitting the market in sort of in the next month or two.
Okay, so folks, if you're listening to this, then yeah, get in touch with Jonathan about that. All right, what else is on my list of things to ask you about? All right, yeah, so you talked a little bit about how a deal works, and
yes.
you mentioned competitive tension or getting a good
yes.
price. So I guess there's probably some unwritten rules about how you do that. How does that work? How do you make sure there's enough interested parties? So say we're selling a 10 megawatt battery. It's probably too mm-hmm. small for you guys. Say 100 megawatt battery. How do we get the right price for it? And what sort of work do you do to find the right buyers?
Well, in terms of the work we do to find the right buyers, the fact that we're sort of out there constantly buying and selling businesses all the time means that we sort of know the right buyers often just because we've recently interacted with them on another deal.
Yeah.
So we know the buyers already, and we have sort of access into all of the investment directors and the decision makers who can sort of who will be interested in this stuff, and we know them pretty well.
It's a tricky, it's a yes. thin line, right? Because
yeah.
your job is to be a trusted partner, but on the other hand, you kind of need to get everyone excited. And they need to know that there's other interested parties.
Yes.
Because that is key.
Yes.
So that is a very thin line to tread, which probably involves quite a lot of emotional intelligence as well.
Yeah.
Are there any sort of unwritten rules about how that's handled?
Well, you're right. There isn't a hard rule on it. It's a bit of a sort of a balance and an art. Okay. And people have to trust us when sort of engaging with us, and that's we like to deal with parties in a process sort of fairly
mm-hmm.
and openly and honestly. But it is part of our role to see, quite often to see how much interest we can generate in an asset.
Yeah.
And when I was talking earlier about thinking about the buyers, thinking about how to market to them, part of the early stage conversations we'll be having will be, guided towards trying to see if we can generate as much interest as possible. And then naturally you don't want to sort of take forward too many people through a process and waste too many people's time, including even sort of the management and the
yeah.
And our clients. So there's an element of filtering as we go through a process. So as you get indicative offers, thereafter you might down select a little bit more. And then you're only dealing with a sort of the right sort of handful of people that that are serious. But also they know that they've got a decent chance of actually coming through and potentially securing that business or that asset at the end.
Okay. Let's talk about pricing for a second, because I've just got off literally 2 days ago, got off a plane. We were in, Tim and I, the co-founder of Modo, we were in California at a conference and speaking to various options for fundraising. And valuations are all everyone's talking about at the moment,
yep.
because in startups and VCs, because public markets have taken such a hammering, that has an impact all the way down to Series C, Series B, not so much Series A and C, but later stage. So we're okay for now. And so multiples have been hammered. So usually you value a business on a multiple on its earnings or its revenues or whatever. And so could you talk a little bit about that, particularly about businesses, not so much
yeah.
assets? I understand how to value an asset.
Yeah.
But what about a business?
Yeah.
Let's use an example. We just talked about corn, but we won't use that one. Let's talk about another business in the ether somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you value it?
Well, so there's all various different methodologies that you can sort of look at when valuing a business. So you mentioned multiples. And really what that's doing is saying, let's have a look at other comparable businesses that are similar, and what do they sell and buy for? Okay, and what do they trade at? So there's that method. There's also looking at sort of things like what is the future earnings potential of this business, and you can do discounted cash flow analysis. So there's lots of different methods that you can use to try and value a business, and which ones you use might sort of very much be dictated around the type of business that you're looking at. But I think possibly what's more interesting is to think about what do investors want and what are they looking for when they are valuing a business, okay? And it's not just about, what did so-and-so pay for something that looked quite similar and trying to match that. It's about, I'm putting some money to work here and I want to make a return from it, okay? And I'm either going to make a return from it because it's going to generate some cash flows and I can take that cash and I can keep it, or it's going to make a return because I think I can sell it on in a couple of years' time for more,
mm-hmm.
okay, and I can grow it in the interim. So how they get that return will vary from investor to investor. So your classic sort of infrastructure fund will want, you know, long-term stable cash flows, and that's what they'll look for in a business, and that's what they'll value highly, and they like that stability, and they'll sort of pay a lot and require a low return for those cash flows. Private equity, they like to have fast-paced growth sort of investments and sort of buy in and then sort of sell back out in a couple of years' time once they've sort of added value and they've grown their business. So when you're coming up with a valuation, you are looking at, you know, what do other things trade at, but you're also looking at, you know, the future returns and the risk in those returns for a given business.
So it's the age old, the price is what everyone's willing to pay for it. or the net present value of future cash flows, I guess.
It's not just that, but because it's, you know, the future cash flows could come from a variety of different commercial decisions you've got to make. So how fast and how hard am I going to grow, be able to grow this business? Do I believe in what's driving those future cash flows? So is there either, you know, if it's an asset, is there contractual protections in place that's going to give stability around those cash flows and going to give me the certainty those cash flows are going to come off? If it's about a business that's going to grow fast, okay, do I believe in the management team? Mm. Is that management team actually credible? Do I think they know how to actually grow this business? Do they have the operational capability? Do they have the experience? Are they credible in that sense? And you'll look for that as part of trying to work out, you know, whether you think this business can actually sort of make the money that that you want it to.
Okay.
The other thing I was going to mention is synergies as well.
Yeah.
And strategic ambition. So not all the buyers are infrastructure funds or private equity or pension funds. It's worth thinking about corporates as well. And quite often, they might see strategic advantage in buying a business because it might give them capability. So it's a new business that does some whizzy optimization, and maybe they want that as part of their wider business.
Yeah, like the trading operators got bought, exactly. And the optimizers have been bought by utilities who want to be able to do that stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So it might be one of those, or they might think that they can sort of, you know, run the business in a more operationally efficient way, those sorts of things. And all that gets factored into the value as well.
Okay. Now I want to ask you, see a lot of deals, and I just love saying the word deals. It just sounds very grown up. So you see a lot of these transactions. How you must see some trends when you see all these, you know, things coming across your desk, pricing or sectors or the winds of change. So what are you seeing across the sector in the deals you're looking at or working on?
Okay.
I guess if you want to start on the big trends and maybe some detailed ones.
Well, the big trends are things like energy transition, huge opportunity, more ESG investment. So those are the big sort of macro sort of trends. Right now at the moment, you've also got a couple of other sort of trends which are providing a bit of uncertainty. So things like sort of high inflation, interest rate rises,
Putin.
Geopolitics, exactly, which provides a bit of uncertainty into that mix. I would say for energy transition, the longer term trends will probably win through on that. Mm. I think we've got short term disruption, but most of these investors can see the end game, can see 2050, they can see the opportunity, and they take a longer sort of horizon around it.
Yeah, who'd have thought that you could start, you know, if you owned development rights to a fracking site, that in 2022 in the UK, September, you might actually be quids in. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. But I think, that's one of the trends. And then I think what is also quite interesting is where investors' mindsets are trending, and where their preferences are trending. So we've seen over the last few years, quite an increasing trend towards two things. One, it's services, and two is platforms. On the services front, you see that come up in things like assets as a service. So when I was talking about Zenobē, for an example, you've got electric vehicles there provided as a service.
Yeah.
We helped Equitix a couple of years ago buy a business called MapleCo, which owns and rents smart meters. That's a service they're providing to the energy retailers.
You can get toilet roll as a service now, you know. You can. Yeah, toilet roll as a service. What was the other one that sent me the other day? Toilet roll as a service and I can't remember the one. Equally funny, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But investors like those services.
Yeah.
And they like the services because it gives them more certainty and stability in the earnings of that business. They know there's a contracted volume of orders that are coming through, and they like that. So they'll pay higher values for service type businesses.
And that's because you've got some sort of, I wouldn't say guaranteed, but some surety, if you like, in future cash flows because people are in a subscription.
Yeah. Exactly. So we see lots of appetite for those, and those businesses tend to attract sort of higher multiples and higher valuations. The other trend that I mentioned was platforms. So if you think about the energy transition broadly, there's quite a lot of small disparate assets. You know, so yes, we're getting, the days of sort of here's a big nuclear power station, those still exist, but those are becoming less so. And the opportunity is a lot more in disparate assets. So if you think about solar panel on your roof at home or battery in your house, even grid scale stuff, that is lots of assets spread across wide geography. Quite often you can't deploy, if you're an investor and you need to put to work hundreds of millions of pounds worth of capital, you might not be able to deploy all that capital in one go.
Yeah.
Because those assets aren't there immediately today. You need to build up a portfolio. So quite a lot of investors nowadays are looking for things they call platforms. And that's essentially the ingredients of sort of management team, operations, all the sort of the operational infrastructure that can help put assets to work and assets in the ground, giving them, maybe not on day one, but over time, a pathway towards deploying hundreds of millions of pounds worth of capital.
It's kind of gone full circle, because I think there's a few of these companies now that have started up that so for example, who's a good example? Field, I don't know if you come across Field. They have essentially built a business that's got full capability across finding sites, developing them, contracting for them, building them, commissioning them, operating them, optimizing them. It's like a fully integrated company. And 10 years ago when I first joined Centrica, that's what Centrica was. And it was really cool because there were cost efficiencies and you could share knowledge between the thing. It was just fantastic. And then somehow about 5 years ago, that became really uncool. And now we're moving back to fully integrated companies that can add value through being integrated. And they're being called platforms this time. But it's the same thing. It all goes full circle, right? And there's a few other companies that are doing the same thing.
Yeah. I think that's a function of the huge sort of growth opportunity that's there. And the fact that all that capital can be put to work. And so that's then necessitating the buildup of these businesses that can then sort of create the infrastructure and the machinery to then put that capital to work.
Actually, I don't know whether, coming back to that example, I don't know whether they're doing optimization. Mm. I still think that the trend is to leave optimization to a third party optimizer. It's as if like that's the bit that's a bridge too far. We're not gonna go there, which is, I can see why, because as I've said it a million times on this podcast, but optimization is tricky. So there's some big trends. We talked about some big tailwinds, so net zero and that kind of environment, and then some short-term issues with geopolitics and interest rates and inflation, which is, tricky. I mean, particularly if you're trying to build assets right now, you get a price and it's out of date a week later. It's very difficult to how do you run a business in this inflationary environment? Mm-hmm. Who knows? And you talked a little bit about platforms and services. Now I want to give you a chance, two things. One, which is the plug, right? So if you've got something you want to plug, then go for it now. And the second thing is I want to ask you more longer term around your thinking around energy transition. What do you see in the future and what are you excited about? But I'll give you the opportunity for a plug first.
Okay. So look, I think hopefully you'll have got the impression that we really know this space around energy transition really, really well at PwC. So, and we know that sort of right across the value chain from generation assets all the way down to including retail. And we've done deals in all those sorts of various bits in the value chain. We're perfectly placed to know the sort of the upcoming developers, the companies, the businesses that require capital, but also we're constantly talking to the investors that want to put money to work. So if you have something you want to buy, something you want to sell, if you want to raise some capital, then just come and speak to us.
So you guys are like Tinder, basically, but but you also do the photos and you also do the bios.
And with the financial analysis as well. So we'll check your bank statements.
Okay, good. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but I mean, that could be a paid plugin for Tinder. And then there's the second thing. So how are you and your colleagues thinking about energy transition opportunities? And what are you excited about in the future?
Well, I think it's a market that's just going to, it's very organic. So it's just going to constantly deliver new and exciting businesses. So we've sort of seen already over the history how renewables started off as a slightly weird niche sort of generation asset, and investors were a bit unsure about it. And now it's highly commoditized, hundreds of millions of pounds, billions being deployed into renewables. The same thing is currently happening to battery storage, has been happening to things like smart metering. And so what I find really exciting is, one, sort of working on those deals and helping those businesses as they grow and as they move from owner to new owner, but also looking out for sort of those new technologies, those new businesses that are going to be the next wave. So things like, I think there'll be longer duration storage. I think it's going to be exciting. Hydrogen presents lots of opportunities. And I think sort of things like floating offshore wind also show quite a bit of promise as well.
Yeah.
As well as, the whole host of these sort of technology and services businesses playing into the market and supporting that build out.
Nice. Well, Jonathan, I think we've run out of time. I want to say thank you for coming on and
thank you very much for
coming
us
all the way into our London office for today. If anyone's listening, you've really got to hit the subscribe button, folks, because I'm measured on the number of subscribers we get by Izzy, our producer. And also, please do share and do all the good stuff. It really means the world to us. If you've got any comments and feedback, make sure you let us know either through the platform or, just send us a letter in the post. That would be nice. All right, see you later. Bye.